Welcome to Unstitching ADHD Urban Ed Talks. I'm your host, Dr. Stanley Ekiyo. In this episode, our focus will be on ADHD in schools. Today, we have the honor of having Ms. Sue Augustinelli, a nationally certified school psychologist and expert in this field, joining us today. Sue, thank you for joining us, and we appreciate your willingness to share your expertise and experience working with students with ADHD.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for asking me.
Please, can you briefly tell us about yourself, a little bit about yourself?
So, as you said, I'm a nationally certified school psychologist. I've been working in the Rochester City School District for 28 years. And then I have an extra year outside. So I'm in my 29th year. And I've had lots of experience dealing with students with ADHD.
Thank you. Can you give us an overview of ADHD for those listeners right now that are wondering, you know, what it is?
Sure. So the first thing I want to say is that the names of ADHD have changed over time, but it all still means the same thing. We have students that present with what we call more ADD, so without the hyperactivity, where you're unfocused, inattentive, impulsive, and then some students have the hyperactivity with it. Sometimes they say ADHD with hyperactivity or without. Sometimes they call it just ADHD. It all still means the same kind of symptoms. And not every student is the same. Not every student has every symptom. Some students are just really incredibly hyperactive, but they're able to focus, if that makes sense. And some kids have difficulty with impulsivity and hyperactivity, but the inattention isn't an issue. Or sometimes there's students that are just much more internally distracted, where internally things are going on in their brain. They're just, you know, not able to focus within their brain, but to see them, they look like they're paying attention. So every student is very different, and it's very important to kind of not put every kid in the same bucket. It's very different. You have to handle them one by one and see what makes a difference for them.
How would you describe its impact on students in the school setting from your experience?
It impacts a lot. It can greatly impact students that are what I call more externally distracted. So those are the kids that are either have a difficult time sitting for the amount of time that they need to sit. Sometimes they're so impulsive, they're running the building. Those kids that look more externalized can often be categorized as naughty, as being a behavior problem, where it may be something that they're really truly not able to control. So those kids get noticed first by nature of the fact that they're disrupting. They're disrupting the class or they're disrupting the school, and they often require an adult to get them back onto task or get them back into their seat. The other students that I worry about a lot more are those what I call internalized kids. Those kids that they're looking at you when I'm talking to you. They look like they're nodding their head and they seem like they're paying attention, but really what they're thinking about is some other thing, and they're not able to process that information. And sometimes those kids get lost. They fall through the crack. They think, oh, that student must have a learning disability. That student's just, you know, they may have, other issues going on. And really what's going on is their brain is processing something totally different than what they're supposed to be processing.
So how do you identify and diagnose ADHD students in your district based on your experience?
Yep. So ADHD, whether you have hyperactivity or not, is a medical diagnosis. It's diagnosed through the medical community. It is not something we diagnosed within the school district. However, we see kids, right? We see kids that are diagnosed and not diagnosed. And when I get referrals for kids, all the students, we know this student's got ADHD, this student's got this. The first step is to do a lot. From a psych standpoint, we do a lot of work behind the scenes. We look at history. We look at medical history. We look at all sorts of other things. Are they able to hear? Are they able to see? Has this the first time we've ever heard about this? You know, is this the first time all of a sudden now they're not able to focus? Or they're all of a sudden jumping out of their seat, but, you know, they're in fourth grade and there's never been a complaint about this in the past. Things like that. We have to do a lot of kind of investigative background history to see what's going on and kind of pinpoint what is happening. And I want to One thing I want to really emphasize, especially for educators and for parents, is that ADHD isn't necessarily like, you can't go to the doctor and say, oh, take a test like you would for your eyes, right? If you're having difficulty seeing, what do? You go to the optometrist, they give you a bunch of, you know, they put those things in front of you and they say, yes, this, and they give you an exact diagnosis. ADHD, unfortunately, is not one of those things. A lot of times ADHD is just, it's a group of symptoms, and there are things we rule out. We rule out as an educator, education system, and the medical community rules out. And then you kind of boil it down to, well, it's got to be ADHD then, because we've ruled out all these other things. I wish it could just be as simple as taking a test. I really do, because it would rule out a lot of things, because everybody looks ADHD. I look ADHD if I've had too much coffee, right? Or if I haven't gotten enough sleep, I'm not processing information like I should be, right? Or as quickly as I should be. So there's a lot of things that you have to rule out before you can, you know, really pinpoint that ADHD is really the culprit. And ADHD is really, if you truly have ADHD, it's a chemical imbalance in your brain. So it's not just simply saying, oh, this student is naughty, they're not getting enough sleep, they're eating too much sugar. It's not just that. There's a chemical imbalance in the brain that's making their front part of their brain kind of sleepy. And it's that front part of your brain that tells you, I need to sit in my seat because the teacher's talking to me right now. I'm not going to jump out of my seat. It's that screen or that thing that makes you stop and think first. I had a doctor at one point in my career, and I can't remember for the life of me who it was, but I remember they described the student as having a Ferrari engine in a Honda. That their engine is ready to go. They're ready to be on a racetrack, but they're driving down the road in a Honda, you know, minivan. So that analogy kind of always stuck with me, because it's a really good kind of a pinpoint of an analogy, like the bodies are ready to go, but I can't. So.
So with what you just described, it's a process, right?
Yes.
So what will be your advice to professionals out there, like teachers and administrators, you know, that suspect that what they are seeing is ADHD, what will be your advice so that they don't make conclusions based on what they are seeing?
The first thing I would say to any educator, administrator or otherwise, is, you know, I would say things like, they're showing signs of, I would describe the behavior versus saying, I get a lot of people that come to my office and they say, oh, this student's got autism, this student's got ADHD, we're not the people that diagnose that. So I would very much hesitate for people to say, this student has, because the first thing I say to that person when they say that to me is, they've got a diagnosis then? Because you can have symptoms of things, but not necessarily have that diagnosis. So I would greatly encourage people to say, I'm seeing these symptoms. Instead of just kind of trying to call it a label, tell me what you're seeing. That's more important to me than you telling me that the student has ADHD. Well, you suspect they have ADHD, they may not. I would definitely get a hold of, every building has an MTSS department or MTSS team. Every building has school psychologists in it. I would absolutely make that kind of a referral and have that conversation and say, these are the things I'm seeing. As a psych, the very first thing I'm going to do is go into the classroom. I'm going to go look at the student. I'm going to put my eyes on the student and I'm going to say, I can tell you, you know, I've seen enough where I'm like, and I'm not saying I can diagnose because I can't, but I can see enough to say, oh, listen, this is what's going on in this classroom. Or maybe it's like, okay, now I got my eyes on it. Now I'm going to go do some investigation. One of the things doctors always have us do as part of diagnosis is ruling other things out educationally. So we have to rule out that there's a learning disability going on, because if a student has a true learning disability, like an auditory processing problem where they truly have a difficult time understanding auditory information and remembering it and getting it back out again, that can very much look like ADD, right? If I'm not understanding what's heard or what I'm hearing, I'm able to process that information, it looks like I'm not paying attention. And those students often get are you paying attention? Are you paying to pay attention better? So we have to rule out a learning disability. So that's going to be one piece of things, is that the psychologist will need to do a bunch of evaluation pieces to that. There's a lot of observation. The other thing that I would say is, Students that truly have ADD everywhere. They can't turn it on, they can't turn it off. So they're gonna have it on at 11 o'clock at night at your house. They will have it on at 6 a.m. in the morning. So if they're hyper, they're hyper. If they have ADHD or if they have ADD, you're gonna see it across everywhere. It's not gonna just be during reading instruction or during math instruction. So that's another piece of things that, you know, we have conversations with parents. And a lot of times when things are obvious, parents are like, oh, I already talked to the doctor. Listen, this kid, I take them to church and they're all over the place at church. And that, we don't tolerate that. Or I can't take them to the grocery store because if I do, this is what happens. So parents with that have been dealing with this for long enough, if it's truly ADHD, they're going to be like, oh, glad you called. I could have told you that's what was going on. So there's a lot of things that we rule out.
Good. So for a parent that is finding this information for the first time, that maybe they don't know, they just think it's a kid being a kid, because most kids are active, you know, at the early stage, everybody wants the kid to be active, right?
Yeah,
so for parents like that, from your experience, how do you get them on speed? How do you get them to understand what's going on, you know, so that they can be partners in the process?
So if a referral comes to me from a teacher and they haven't had a discussion with a parent yet, we usually have, I'll have like a parent-teacher conference with the teacher. If they have more than one teacher, if they're seeing it in phys ed, I bring them the phys ed teacher. Or the art teacher, or the Spanish teacher, whoever it is, and have kind of conversations about, okay, at home, what are you seeing? Are you seeing any of these things at school? What are the things that we're seeing? These are the things that we need to define and figure out. And then from there, once we've gathered that information, usually what I'll say to the parent is, before you go to the doctor, I usually ask, have you already gone to the doctor? Have you already shared this stuff with the doctor? Do they have diagnosis? But a lot of times what I'll do is I'll say, hang on, before you go, let me sign this consent, because I need consent, and I want to do a little bit of testing to figure out what's going on here. See if I can pinpoint. There are checklists that we have that we can provide across different settings. So parents, teachers, and multiple teachers in multiple settings, I can have them fill out kind of question their standardized questionnaires and their normative measures based on what you're seeing at home. How often do you see this? And then it kind of quantifies it, like, oh, well, you know, I don't see any I don't see any hyperactivity at home, but I see tons of inattention. They can't remember one thing. I tell them to go up to their room and, you know, go grab this, whatever, this jacket from your closet and come on back down. And they come back, they go up to the room and then they come back down. They can't remember what I said to them. Things like that. It'll quantify everything. And then I can compare things across different settings. And provide a little bit more standardized data. And then also ruling out, you know, the presence of any kind of a learning disability as well. Then that gets written up. And then if we're still seeing that, you know, we've tried some interventions and we're still seeing that, you know what, I think it's probably a good idea to go to the doctor, then at that point, I would give those reports to the parent and ask that, you know, if the parent is wanting to pursue any kind of diagnosis, I would give that and have them go to their doctor.
So what role do accommodations and modifications play in helping students with ADHD succeed?
Yeah. So a lot of times I tell teachers, you know, I've had teachers really get hung up on that diagnosis, having those letters in their health file. And sometimes that takes a while. Sometimes doctors are like, let's wait and see. Sometimes parents are just, they just don't have an interest in finding that stuff out. So what I say to teachers and educators is, does it really matter? Let's talk about the behaviors. Let's go with the assumption that we've done all of this work and we're all kind of like, we really think this is not a naughty behavior. This is a, we really can't control ourselves behavior. Let's treat it as it is. And so then we work on putting things in place that could make an impact for the student and make things better, better for the student and also better for his peers that are around him that may be getting disrupted as well, because, you know, Johnny is all over the place, getting out of his seat, falling out of his chair, things like that. There's lots of tools for the trade, and it all is really behavior dependent. A lot of times that I teachers will say to me, oh, I see this, 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 and they give me a laundry list of behaviors. And I say, okay, if I can fix one of these, if I can take one of these behaviors away, Give me the biggest bang for your buck. Which one would make the most difference to you? And we start with that. You know what? He's running out of my room. Okay, let's work on that. Let's start there. Let's see if we can get this modified for him so that he's not doing that anymore. And then we'll work on the next most important behavior for you. There's some simple things that we can do that have made huge impacts for I know across years. One of the examples is for students that are having a hard time understanding where their space are, I give them their space. I give them a visual. I will tape on the floor around their desk a box. And it's not a small box. It's not like I'm trying to confine them to a small space, but I'll give them a big box on the floor and it's visual, and it'll be, usually I have red tape. And it's a visual, and they know I can stand up at my desk. I can lay in my chair. I can lay across my desk, but I can't move out of this box when it's seat time. I'm going to do whatever I got to do to get my work done, but you got to stay within that box. Same thing for younger kids that are on the carpet. I give them a visual area to stay in. And then you can literally just say, without interrupting your instruction as a teacher, to say, oh, red box, or some sort of cue word. And the kid's like, oh, because remember, these are kids that are not naughty. They're not doing this on purpose. They need multiple reminders. I'm like, oh, I got it. Oh, I got it. So things like that. There's things like some kids need preferential seating. Some kids just need all of the kids to be behind them, so they're behind my back and I'm not looking at them, watching, you know, this one's playing with their hair and this one's laying in their chair. If they're not in my visual field, I'm able to much more readily pay attention to what's going on in front of me with the teacher. There's just a lot of tips of the trade for that kind of things. There's a lot of stuff online as well. Lots of, you know, trial and error tips that people can try and see. Some kids need more tactile input to pay attention, so that if I'm playing with something like a fidget toy, or you know, it can be anything. It can be a piece of Play-Doh. It can be you know, a lot of those fidgety gadgety things that you can get. I had one doctor suggest, because the student was, we gave him a koosh ball and they were throwing it up in the air. Okay, well, that's obviously going to cause more disruption, and the kid looks like he's playing now to the other kids. So how come he gets to play and I don't get to? So we suggested, the psychiatrist, or the, I don't know if it was a psychiatrist or a psychologist, but they suggested, how about some hand lotion? How about non-scented, you know, we got allergy free, non-scented. And when he needed to do that, just give him a little pump of hand lotion, and just, you know, hand lotion is never going to hurt anybody, right? It just makes his hands really nice and soft. And it made a huge difference for him. Huge difference. His hands were also very nice and soft, but it, you know, it didn't cause any disruption. It wasn't loud. It wasn't anything. He just got a little pump and that was it. And he was able to kind of focus on what was going on.
Mm-hmm. So, I know a while ago you said something about, you know, it's not something that is only that does manifest only in schools, right? If you have ADHD, it's across the board. So mm-hmm. there might be a parent out there wondering, you know what? I want to support, or a caregiver, I want to be involved, but I don't know what to do to support my kid in school. What would be your mm-hmm. advice to that listener right now?
I would absolutely say you should be involved anyway. The teachers should be involving you. And if they haven't, get involved. I would ask for, you can come in and observe. Although I would say observing, you know, your student might then feel, oh, I'm naughty. Here comes mom. Here comes dad. You know, here comes grandma. Oh, I'm in trouble now. So you don't want that to happen. And it also can change the behavior in the classroom when you're in there. It changes the behavior when I'm in there. I try to slide in the back and, you know, as quietly as I can, because I want to see as authentic of an environment as I can. But I would definitely be talking to having parent conferences with the teacher, having with the MTSS or the intervention team at your building. And if the teacher's like, hey, this is what I do for this, when I'm seeing this behavior, this is what I do. Have you tried that at home, or do you see that at home? And it's also a good way to just kind of share ideas, but also share what, you know, what's going on in the classroom. But maybe at home, I don't have that at all, but I got this going on. And pick everybody's brains. Or there may be things that you know from home that works that we can then bring into the classroom. So sharing those ideas, I would encourage any parent for any kind of behavior. I don't care whether it's ADHD or any kind of behavior. You know your student, And you probably have a lot of good tips of the trade that work for your student that we can absolutely utilize in the classroom. So I would definitely encourage a lot of collaboration between home and school.
About teachers and administrators, from your experience, have you seen trainings or professional learning experiences that are ADHD specific?
There's a lot of stuff online. There's a lot of Dr. Russell Barkley is kind of a, he's not kind of, he's one of the leading psychologists out there for ADHD. And his I know he does a lot of online things, but he also has a lot of books and a lot of kind of checklists and things like that that we can use. He's definitely somebody that I would look up and get some resources for him. Ross Green is another one, Dr. Ross Green. There's a lot of stuff out there. There's a lot of stuff out there. The thing I want to make sure I really want to emphasize is that it isn't one intervention fits all students. It's very much student specific. And it also can be that something works today, but it's not going to work tomorrow. And I know teachers get really frustrated because they get right on a good path, right? Like, oh my God, this red box, this taped red box is working great. And then all of a sudden it doesn't work anymore. And the teacher's like, oh, you know, it doesn't work anymore. And they get frustrated. It doesn't mean that the red box won't work again. It's just everybody's different on a different day, right? One day I wake up and I'm raring to go, and the next day I'm dragging my feet, right? So you can't give up on everything, and it's not necessarily going to be just a magic fix. If we had a pill that we could just literally say, okay, this is done now, you know, like putting on a pair of glasses, my vision's better now that I've got a pair of glasses. I wish it could be that simple, but it's just not. It's a culmination of just continual trial and error.
Are there any local resources or organization that you are aware of through your experience that you always suggest parents reach out to, you know?
To be very honest, I'm drawing a blank on my head. I know there's a lot of stuff out there, but I would greatly encourage you to get in touch with your school psychologist at your building, because they'll find you stuff. If they don't know, if this was me, if the parent was coming to me right now, I'd be like, I don't know. I'm going to find stuff for you. And they will find stuff for parents based on tailoring exactly to what they're needing.
Okay. So as we try to wrap this up, Sue, is there any final word, anything you would want to say to our listeners right now?
I would just say, you know, there's a lot of supports out there, and there's a lot of things that can happen within the classroom without automatically going all the way to special education or all the way to 504. There's a lot of good first teaching that can happen, and a lot of interventions that can be put in place, very simple interventions that can really make a huge difference for students. I think that people, sometimes educators get, if they get this diagnosis of ADHD for a student, they automatically think that we need to automatically go all the way to special ed, and this kid needs a small class, and that's just not the case. There are students that will need that. They need to go all that way that far, but it's a trial and error, and there's a lot of things that need to happen to be put into place to keep students in gen ed as long as they can stay in gen ed, as long as they're successful in getting their education. So lots of things along the way, and it's not a fast process. It's just not. It's a lot of trial and error.
Hey, thank you so much, Sue, for sharing your expertise and insight on ADHD in schools. Your advice will undoubtedly benefit educators, parents, and students alike. We're hoping you'll join us next time when we call on you for more enlightening discussions.
Sure, no problem.
As we end this episode, we also want to express our deep gratitude to our listeners for their continued support and engagement. Your participation is not just welcomed, but it's crucial. So please subscribe, share, join our community, so that together we can unravel the complexities of ADHD. Thank you for tuning in.